Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is Willem Vanderhorst, your host. I'm doing a double introduction. There's going to be an introduction a little bit later in the show, so I'm not really going to be talking much about that, the usual explaining what the show is, because I'm doing it afterwards, actually. A few days ago, I had the really great pleasure of being at Game Camp, an unconference that happens in London, all about gaming. And for those who are not familiar with the term unconference, it's a participant-driven conference, essentially, or event. In this case, all about gaming. So everybody that comes up, there's a big board, there's rooms, but everybody comes with whatever they want to talk about, whatever they want to discuss. Sessions are completely open and entirely driven by participants. So it's like broken down in half-hour slots. Anybody can put up a talk or something of a theme, a playtest, anything they want. And then there was multiple other rooms with like all sorts of board games to be trying out. A bunch of video game, indie, like video games and video game studios testing out their games. And it was good fun. And, I thought it was a great opportunity to do my first live audience recording. So we started out with 3 or 4 people and ended up at the end of the session with 14 people. So, really great conversation. We had a bunch of really cool people. All the people are going to be in the show notes, but there was Ed, who is a journalist at Starburst. Dave, who is a game designer, and afterwards I went to his session about discussing the links and examples between improv comedy and video games and how they're built on a culture of yes and how they're built on the similar kind of culture of adding on and accepting and saying yes and to any kind of proposition. And I did a little bit of improv comedy when I was a teenager, and that was a fun session. A lot of really interesting people working in the design industry. I tried that game that we mentioned in the episode called Line Wobbler, which is like there's like tiny luminous colored dots, LEDs on a strip, and you just have this kind of, just wobbler, I guess. So you move around. It's a fun game. So they're calling it a one dimensional video game. So it's kind of an arcade game. It's totally an arcade game. I don't know. I'll try to find if there's a video online, and I'll add that in the show notes as well. It was a fun day overall. Really fun to be recording a live audience. I completely was winging it and improvising. I didn't have any massive questions because I didn't know who's going to show up for the recording. And I'm kind of winging the intro at the same time as well. A couple of things to note during the episode. Because people were at different distances of the microphone, and it's the first time I was doing this, the voice levels are different. I edited and leveled as much as I could. My voice is higher. I use the leveler in Audacity, which is the sound editing software that I use. But generally, everything's understandable. I hope it's not too much of a bother, but sorry if it is. There are some light Pixar Inside Out spoilers. Not huge spoilers, but if you haven't seen the movie Inside Out and you really hate spoilers, you should know that. There is a little bit of a mic noise, and there's people arriving in the room as we go. So there's like, they're moving chairs. So there's a bit of a noise. And of course, it's exactly the kind of stuff that I didn't hear anything. People were like being as quiet as they could, but the microphone picks up the randomest, like, you know, bumps and whatever. So there's that going on, but I don't think it's a big deal, but you know, just to warn you. Overall, it was a really fun conversation. We talked about tabletop role-playing games, live-action role-playing games, indie video games, the relative merits of Candy Crush, some other classic video games that people grew up with, the projects that the designers and developers are working on. It was good fun. Complete geek out about gaming, and I think it would be interesting for people who are not into gaming as well, and geek culture in general. There's a bunch of talks about advertising at the end and what we remember and the kind of ads that get stuck in our minds as well, so that was good fun too. But overall, yeah, I think it's going to be, I hope you enjoy it, essentially. For those who listen regularly, or even if you don't listen regularly, but if you enjoy listening to this, and I repeat this in every time, but you know, if you're listening to this on your iPhone podcasting app or through iTunes, which is the same thing, essentially, but I mention it because the podcasting app on the iPhone doesn't say iTunes, but that's where it's linked to. But it'd be awesome if you could just give us a rating, give us some stars, and even better, take a few minutes to write a review. It makes a hell of a difference. If you enjoy the show, just say so. Or if you just want to send some feedback, you can email me at Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net. That's everything spelled out, icecreamforeveryone.net, which is also the website, www.icecreamforeveryone.net. You can find me on Twitter if you want to give me some feedback. That's at HippoWill. You can find the Ice Cream for Everyone page on Facebook and just leave a comment there. Occasionally, I get a few people that give me comments and that enjoy. It makes a hell of a difference. Like, I poured a number of hours into this. So if you enjoy it, I love to hear back from you, essentially. Or if you have feedback, any kind of questions or comments or, what I could be improving in your view or the kind of guests that you'd like to hear on the show, it'd be awesome. I thought I'd mention I'm starting to wrap up, and I'm like, with the recordings I'm organizing at the moment, I'm going to slowly wrap up the first season officially, because I'm going to break things down in season, and I'm going to take a break over the summer to start planning and organizing for season 2 in the fall, somewhere around September. I don't really have the exact dates, but I'll be talking about that a little bit more. Anyhow, without further ado, here's a bunch of people that I did for a live audience recording at Game Camp number 8 at the London South Bank University a few days ago. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I am joined by several gentlemen today. This is very exciting. We're at Game Camp in London today. I'm joined by Ed.
Hi, I'm Ed Fortune. I am a journalist for Starburst magazine, and I write the games column Brave New Words and Roll for Damage.
Awesome. And Dave, right?
Yeah, Dave Cooper. I'm the developer of Blockships, a local multiplayer battle arena game where you build the biggest, baddest ship by blowing up your buddies. Uh-huh. It's the illegitimate love child of Space Invaders and Tetris.
Awesome.
And I'm George Cheel, a student from London South Bank University. Bonsai Treehouse, creator of You Are Worthless, a video game where nothing happens. And I'm just happy to be here.
That sounds amazing. All right, cool. So for anybody who doesn't know, and for you guys in the first place, and for all our listeners, for the people who are not familiar with the show, so I'm a marketing and brand strategist during my daytime, essentially. I used to work for marketing and advertising agencies here in London and in Asia, and I've traveled all around. And I'm also a gamer, particularly tabletop games, role-playing games, been playing role-playing games forever. I like board games, bit of video games. I'm really interested in gaming mechanics and playing in general. And so I tend to alternate between interviewing game designers for the podcast and people in either design, branding, strategy, advertising, that kind of stuff, or occasionally other random people that I'm just interested in learning about. And I found out there was Game Camp going on this week, and I thought, well, why not try to organize a recording? And you got rounded up at the last minute, I believe, and we're recording together. So this is exciting, right? So who can tell us a bit about what Game Camp is?
Game Camp is an unconference whereby people show up and give talks about stuff that people like to talk about and listen to.
Well, it's not even that. They just show up on the day, just slap an event on the timetable, and then just like, hey, we're just making everything up as we go along, this podcast.
Like this podcast, exactly.
It is slightly seeded, so there are people that they know are going to talk, and there is a little bit of stuff going on, but that's the way you start any party. Yeah. You get one person dancing on the dance floor, and it does have that kind of disco feel to it, where it's like, you can see that some people have turned up, and they're here to dance. And they put their stuff up straight away. And then as people get more encouraged to do stuff, more people put... So what I found interesting already, and it's about 11 o'clock now.
Past 11.
Started at 10. We're at about 11 now. And at 10, there were like two or three things. And then now there's like two dozen things. By the end, the last hour is just going to be full of stuff.
Yeah, it's slowly filling up. So there's this big board at the entrance with slots, half-hour slots, and people coming to talk about whatever they're doing. So I took a slot to do this podcast, and people are doing all sorts of different talks or playtesting games, etc. There's also an area where games are being playtested. That's both board games, people playing board games, people trying and playing video games like Blockships, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's a cool little area. There's alongside Blockships, there's also Line Wobbler, made by Robin Baumgarten, which is a one-dimensional video game, which I recommend that you try out.
I have not heard of
it. You wobble a spring, and an LED goes up and down on a line. And I won't say much more than that. You should play it.
It sounds exciting.
I've just, the Haberdashery Collective, who are a bunch of gamers who turn up and just do party games, essentially, I've blind nerf-dueled today. and I've lemon jeweled
Oh, I saw people lemon dueling on the way over.
I don't know what that means.
Lemon dueling, you have two spoons.
Yeah.
Two wooden spoons.
Oh, yeah, okay. I played that in year two, I think.
And on one, you have a lemon that's balanced on your wooden spoon. And then you have another spoon, and you can use that spoon to defend your lemon. And the game ends when there's only one person with one lemon standing. You can also try and steal someone's lemon. I did that. I ended up with two lemons on two spoons.
It's like jousting meets an egg and spoon race.
Yes. But, it's you know, there's obviously the rule is you don't hit the other person. You play the ball. And they also did blind nerf duel, which is literally back-to-back, you face each other. Three steps, turn and shoot. And you can't see the other guy. So I sat down. I knew where the chair was, so I sat down and you kept, like, I could feel the Nerf bullet going over my head whilst I was trying to shoot the guy. And he got me in the end because I was giggling somewhere.
Did you ever play, do you remember that, I don't know if it's still going on, I think it's organized from time to time, but that, like, that game where you're supposed to, you're given, like, target and you're supposed to kill him with either a water gun or something just play killer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was an old university favorite.
Yeah, it was, right? Yeah.
I actually almost fluffed my first, like, my first proper job. I was working in the call centre in Newcastle, and I used to turn up to be very serious and try and get things sorted out. And I bumped into my then boss, but obviously I was still a gamer, but I hadn't told anyone I was working with. I was a gamer. And I'm chatting away to my boss, at which point my friend Mark Wilkin leaps out with a banana and goes, "Aha, finally!" And I stop, and he was like, he was 4 foot away, and the rule is if you get shot with a banana, bananas only have a range of 3 foot. So I was like, aha, miss!
And sounds like an arbitrary rule.
And it's like most rules, like, essentially.
Bananas are, you know, a weapon of a rogue, I think it was the rule that we had. So I was like, excuse me, and I just ran away while being chased by a man with a banana. And completely blew my chances at that job. It was fine, because it was a terrible job. So.
Sounds like the worst Monty Python sketch ever.
So we're also hosted by London South Bank University, and so you study here?
Yeah, I finished my last week, actually, as a matter of fact.
So you graduated already, or?
Well, we technically graduate in October.
Right, but you have it.
We don't have any...
Can I say congratulations, or is it too early?
Well, we only say congratulations when we get the July results, I guess.
Sure, I'll shut up.
So you've got some exams still to do, is that?
No, like, we don't really technically have exams in Game Cultures.
Okay.
It's all just, like, supposed to... The great thing about the Game Cultures course is that it doesn't railroad you down a specific discipline. There's no, like, strict coding or strict arts disciplines. It basically covers the whole spectrum of game development and lets you choose where you want to specialise. The idea is to specialise in as many things as possible, but, like... as much as you're comfortable with.
Okay.
And it's supposed to show in evidence with your final year game and your dissertation.
So is it so how did you come across, like, choosing to study games, actually?
It took a bit of time, but it was like I was going more towards a fine arts direction when I looked back at my life and I was thinking, yeah, I should probably do more of that.
Yeah.
Like, because I was big on games when I was a kid. I was introduced to Super Mario Land, Crash Bandicoot, Mario Party, all the good stuff.
And so where are you from?
I'm from here, about 45 London. Minutes away from on Tube.
Okay, cool. How about you, Dave? Where are you from? Here as well? Or?
Come in.
It's fine, I just saw the door shut, so it's safe.
Okay.
That's what it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we just had someone waving and
the organizers are very worried about doors shut. So it's apparently the doors need to keep open. But that's okay. We're in a corner. There's not too much noise. It should be all right.
Interruption of the week.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Barnet, but never lived there. And then lived on the outskirts of London.
Barnet, which is just North London, basically.
That's right, North London.
I used to live in Finchley, so not too far away.
But then I spent 13 years of my life living in Newcastle, where I ran into Ed briefly and his banana-inspired antics, where we'd run around with rubber swords and hit people. And
so you used to do live action role play together?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very strange that we haven't seen each other in about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Oh, yeah. Maelstrom doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Wow.
I just had this amazing scenario in my head with you guys LARPing like a Thor movie with inflatable hammers. Like bonking each other on the head. Like,
I have been, again, that's very similar to that, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please.
So that's where I met Ed. But then the last 6 years, I've been living in Beijing.
Oh, really?
Until I came back to found my studio, Dr. Deviant, and get Blockships on the road.
And were you doing video games in Beijing, or completely nothing to do with it?
I was a professor at the university there teaching video game development and design.
Oh, cool.
Alongside editing scientific journal papers. And yeah, I finally decided to put my money where my mouth was and take one of my side projects and put it in the forefront.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm from Sarshields, which is the northeast coast. So it's a really, really pretty part of the world. It's really nice. It's really, it's kind of really state. And it's also got no money, as most of the coast of England is pretty cool. So I grew up in that part of the world. It's a really nice part of the world to be. And there's lots of parks. It's a really nice part of the world to kind of, I naturally ended up becoming a LARPer because there's lots of spaces. If you're gaming, people are like, well, let's go outside because it's sunny and there's a beach and we can run around this place and hit each other and have fun. I trained to be a journalist, ended up being a news and current affairs journalist. I fell into information technology because that was where the news was coming from. From there, fell into IT support and fell into information technology that way, and then fell back into journalism. So I'm kind of constantly kind of tumbling, essentially, in various circles. Ended up with a gig with Starburst where I'm pretty much filling all the gaps with various bits and pieces that they do. So they do a lot of the book stuff and a lot of... my technical title is literary editor, which sounds wonderful, but it means I read
a lot. What editor?
Literary editor.
Literary editor, okay.
Which means I read a lot of books. I do a book column called Brief New Words. And I also do the games column because I started to start by doing the board games column.
Okay.
Because when the magazine was relaunched, the magazine...
What kind of magazine is it? I hadn't heard about it.
Starburst, it's all right. It's new. It's only been around since 1977.
Okay.
So it's as old as me.
I'm not British. You might have noticed.
Starburst magazine launched because...
for many things.
Could possibly have given it away.
Yes.
There's this crazy guy called Deskin. He's still around.
Yes.
And he is responsible for a lot of British comic stuff in the 70s. So he launched Doctor Who magazine, for example. He pretty much formed Marvel UK. He was one of the first editors of Marvel UK. And one of the things he did is he commissioned V for Vendetta. So, you know, he's that guy. And one of his first projects was he pretty much blagged his way into a load of photos and a load of rights to talk about Star Wars, which then, back then in 1977, was an indie movie.
Yes.
It was a small independent production.
Sure.
He launched the magazine on the back of Star Wars.
Okay.
And that issue sold something ridiculous like 250,000 copies. Just that issue. And the magazine's not really gone away since. We had a bit of a bubble where it went online for about a year and a bit and changed hands. And now it's in Manchester. So it's a genre, technically speaking, it's a cult entertainment magazine. That's what marketing and what it's called. It's a cult entertainment magazine. Sci-fi, fantasy, and horror.
Yeah.
And we are sort of a movie magazine, but we also do, it's all points geek.
Yeah.
Essentially, so we do books, we do comics, we do video on demand, we have a thing called Independence Day where we talk to indie movie makers. I am constantly talking to indie games developers.
Yeah.
Because we want that kind of, Starburst lives, its niche is not, we're not Empire, we're not SFX, we don't have that niche where it's like, Tom Hiddleston will edit this magazine for this week. No, we don't do that. What we'll do is like, we'll talk to Sarah Pindra 4 years ago when she wasn't famous. Now she is. That's our...
I don't know who she is.
She's a thriller writer.
Okay.
And she's got like 2 movies coming out.
I'll check it out.
You'll know who she is in about 3 years' time. That's our space.
Yeah, got it. And you mentioned you also have, you run podcasts with them as well.
Yeah, they've got, so because they're all about nurturing talent, they've got a radio station called FabRadioInternational.com. I have to say it that way, it's the law.
Yeah, of course. You gotta have the voice.
And the Fab Radio, it lives beneath the studio, it lives beneath the Starburst magazine bullpen in a TARDIS shaped studio because that's what it is. And we have lots of shows, and some of the shows end up being part of the Star Wars Family podcast. So I do a thing called the Bookworm. Mm-hmm. Bookworm's being relaunched as Spirit New World Words because branding. But essentially, it's a bunch of friends who are talking about the book industry, which is going away from our topic of games. You can find out more on Starburst@Starburst_mag or at Radio Bookworm.
Yeah. And I'll get all the details and I'll add them all in the show notes when I publish as well. It'll publish less in a few days. So
cool. Someone's joined us.
Yes, we have a newcomer.
Challenger.
Hello.
I didn't know this was going on, but okay.
Hi.
All right.
What's your
name?
Tillman. This is
a podcast. We're recording a podcast. What's your name? Sorry?
Tillman. Yeah.
Tillman. What do you do, Tillman? Where are you from? We're all wearing these stickers, name tag me? Things.
Right, yeah.
It says, I am, name, I do something. So what does yours say?
Well, I'm Tillman. I do code and I like games, obviously.
Cool. What kind of games do you like?
Pretty much anything. I mean, mostly like indie stuff.
Yeah,
I guess, but like wide range, whatever.
Is there an example of something you played recently and really, really enjoyed?
The thing is, I don't really get to play a lot of games, unfortunately.
Okay.
I try to, but I don't know. If so, then I want to work on my own games anyway.
What are you filling your time with, coding then, or?
Yeah, pretty
what
much.
What kind of coding?
Like currently, I'm working on a puzzle game, so that kind of stuff.
So you're coding for games and developing games rather than playing games right now?
Yeah.
All right, cool. And you're working with Dave or no, not at all?
No, just like solo.
Oh, solo. Yeah. So you're developing your own puzzle game?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Can you talk about it or is it still very much under wraps? Or?
It's really early on, I guess, but the main idea is that it's on a circle. So okay. It's easily to see but hard to explain. Basically, the whole world is just a circle, so you walk around and the world rotates under you.
Okay.
So that you see the whole world wrap around on screen, and then you can move up or down, and that kind of scales the circle in and out.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
There's a book called Flat World.
Bevan, I keep hearing about that.
Bevan, I can't remember his surname, but it's about...
It's about these characters who live in the two-dimensional plane and come in contact with a three-dimensional being.
Which they see as a circle.
Yeah.
Yes.
And circles, because they don't have any sides, are seen as lower class.
Uh-huh.
Because the more sides you have, the more important you are, obviously. Circles don't have any sides. So what is this upstart circle that keeps getting bigger? Because it's a sphere, obviously, so it keeps getting bigger. And it's a really strange book. I think it's 1920, 1930s, something. Mm. It's quite old in it.
I'll have to check it out.
But it's about...
I've heard about it as well. I mean, it rings a bell.
But people have made films about it. You could even make a game about it if you could.
If you feel like it.
Isn't there a scene in the Disney Pixar movie Inside Out where
they get condensed down to abstract thoughts?
Yes, they go down to the non-Euclidean geometry room or something like that, and they just go into they become abstract thoughts, and they go like from being themselves to looking like Picasso, like destructured things, and to just being dots by the end. Yeah, then they're in 2D. So they're just, and then by the end they're just dots.
We're probably giving spoilers away for the movie.
Yes, by the way, if you haven't watched it, so this is bad spoilers for the movie. But it's been a while. I mean, seriously, you've probably seen it. Hey, newcomer, how are you?
Another one.
Great. Hi. So we were just chatting about games. So,
yes, we're chatting about games and we're recording a podcast. Hi. What's your name? Who are you?
I'm a game designer.
Oh, cool. What kind of games do you design?
I do applied gaming and serious games.
So I don't know what that means.
Games for educational purposes and for like military or economic uses.
Well,
I also like to do entertainment games in my spare time.
Sounds very fascinating.
Literally games for game theory?
No. Well, sometimes we might make game systems to help other people make games to teach kids.
Uh-huh.
Social skills, stuff like that.
Yeah. You could use serious games to teach important concepts. Like, for example, you could use them to teach fire safety.
Yeah.
Or you could use them to teach to teach the rights and wrongs of morality. Or to teach empathy. All sorts of different things.
That's kind of what's always freaked me out about games like Hide and Seek or Mr. Wolf. Is that they've all don't die training games. Hide and Seek is literally hide. Run and hide. And it's like, it's a fun kids game. No, it's not. You think about it, it's like, actually, no, that's Run and hide.
Replace the seeker with Jason Voorhees. And...
Or a rival village. and suddenly it becomes much darker.
Another one! Right.
What a dramatic entrance I made. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, what's time, Mr. Wolf, where you have to sneak up on one of your friends?
Yeah. Stealth mechanics.
It's a stealth game. Let's take my bag off here.
I think BuzzFeed are trying to get in on the serious game stance, but then with their website, like trying to embed a lot of flash games related to the news topic they're talking about. Like to get people more involved with the news, yeah. Right, so to speak.
Oh,
I know it because they did a BuzzFeed game jam at some point.
Wow, this is slowly becoming popular.
Oh my god!
There's more and more people walking in.
So suddenly, about 10 more people have joined.
Oh my god, this is amazing!
This is the podcast.
All right, well, we have an audience.
That's okay. Exactly what.
All right, so 1, 2, 3, cheer!
Hey! Marvelous!
I think
amazing.
I think we've literally proven how this works. It's a slow build avalanche.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, so pull some chairs. We're having a conversation about gaming. We're getting to the point where I'm not sure we're going to introduce everyone necessarily.
How much time do we have left?
We have another 20 minutes or so. Okay. If we, you know, I'm sure we, like, whatever. More or less 20 minutes. I was going to ask you guys, so Ed and Dave and whoever wants to join in on that, we were talking about live-action role-playing games. How did you get into that? How did you get into live-action or even role-playing games before?
Well,
do we have any other, like, tabletop or live-action role-players here?
Tabletop, yeah.
All right, cool.
I've been meaning to get into board gaming. The closest I got was about 10 or 15 minutes into Betrayal at House on Hill.
Ooh, which is a really good game.
And
which
I really want to fully get into it at some point.
Well, take your time. I'm going to be playing board games in the play area. So anyway, so back to the question.
So the first time I came into contact with something that would have led me towards role play, and I was aware of it,
yeah,
was probably seeing the TV show Dungeons and Dragons, which is a classic cartoon show with Vagard. What's the name of the evil dude?
Venger!
and the big Tiamat the dragon and Bobby the barbarian. And it's basically a bunch of kids go onto a fairground ride and get transported into this world of fantasy and so forth. And then they have to battle against the evil Tiamat and the evil Venger.
And, your average Tuesday.
And like those ideas of fantasy, you've grown up with them through kids and through things, but suddenly you started playing with them and realizing, hearing from your friends, that there were games where you could actually play this out. So my first real game that I played that had kind of role play elements was probably HeroQuest, the board game.
I got into role playing game because I had a school teacher who basically picked on the nerdy kids, would grab the nerdy kids and make them like socialize, play games. So that teacher then left because he was too good for the school, to be honest. We went off and did other stuff, and we kind of ended up having this kind of informal lunchtime club where you would meet up, roll dice, and most people played Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. So when HeroQuest came out, it was really easy to just go, yeah, it's HeroQuest, but we don't have a board. And people were like, oh, right, you don't need a board, do you? No, right. And then, and I kind of stopped gaming because my voice got deeper and I got taller. At which point, I ended up laughing because it was the 90s.
Yeah.
And there was a thing called Vampire. Vampire was a tabletop role-playing game where everyone got to be terribly, terribly dramatic because it was the 90s, and the 90s was all about melodrama without any actual clue. You know, you had to be really angry and bitter about the world but not actually understand the world, so it was fine.
So that was wonderful.
That was goth before emo. Goth.
Oh, it was
just before emo.
Cool. And I started going because
I used to play Vampire LARP as well back in the day.
But it was full of very tall girls with dark hair and low-cut dresses, so I went.
It was one of the only areas, and it was actually one thing that attracted more women to role-playing games in general, which was quite interesting.
Just insert sexy vampires.
Which, by the way, so just not to put you on the spot, but we do have two women in the audience, which is great, so just as there's not only guys in the audience, it's important to say.
But it was that fascinating thing, because the way that vampire was written is that if you want to play one of the really cool vampires, you buy a suit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, my parents were really confused by that. Like,
so you were playing Aventrum.
Yeah, so people would turn up in a suit. So the guys would dress up well, because the girls dressed up well. And there was that social element that I don't think they designed. But because vampires are a sexy thing and all the rest of it, you ended up having young people game and also it being a kind of goth night golf club night social thing.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up into it. And then obviously that was the slippery short slope to, because I lived in a really nice part of the world with lots of parks, and the slippery slope was running around in a field with a rubber sword, screaming, double! As you hit someone. but yes, I actually, this is a total aside, I ran a game called Rockets, Riggins, and Really Nice Tea about 3 years ago now.
Sorry, repeat the name of the
game? Rockets, Riggins, and Really Nice Tea. Someone told me that they can't do 50s pulp, so I did 50s pulp.
Fantastic.
I won two UK Love Awards for it, which is nice.
Was that in Carlisle?
It was in Yorkshire.
Yorkshire, yeah.
The third one, because what I did is I ran two and I went, I can do this, this is how it works. And then once I ran two, I was like, I made my point, gave it to someone else, and there's another one, there was one in Wales later.
Okay.
But I'd stopped doing it at that point. Yeah. So there's it's now in its third set of hands, because what seems to have happened with Rockets is because of general design, because of the way I designed it,
yeah.
People are like, right, we can do these things with it. Right, we've done those things with it, we're bored now. And give it to someone else. So awesome. It's in the hands of, I've got her name now. She'll kill me. She ran the Split the World's LARP recently. It's amazing. But it's in the hands of another games designer who's
Is it a mega game, technically? Or is it?
What's a mega game?
A mega game is, you know, sort of like a LARP, but with more defined mechanics. So, for example, usually they're implemented with a board. Have you guys ever heard of mega games?
Before? I haven't heard about mega games. I played a version of Azad at Worldcon about 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so there's a definition.
So wait, there's literally a giant board that you walk
and
around.
You play with like 100 players, but you
teams. Yeah, I've not played
the one I did was called Watch the Skies, where it's basically XCOM simulator.
Yeah,
and you enter as a team, so like you're either Japan or USA. United Kingdom, and part of the game is to talk amongst your team. You have the president, technological officer, and you have alien players who are behind the screen and they do their own sort of planning. And the main bulk of the game is walking between the tables, making deals with other nations.
Yeah.
But it's got a turn structure, and you know your military officer.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah,
it sounds incredible.
Really good fun.
No, this was literally a LARP. So what we did was we had access to a scout camp.
Yeah,
and we said in the flyer, a scout camp has been hit with a Martian cylinder.
Right.
And there's a Martian cylinder. We built a Martian cylinder.
Oh, wow.
We had a smoke machine underneath the grass, so it kept going. We had a little puppet designed to crawl out of it at a key point. And people turned up in full costume, and we had people with big handlebar moustaches.
Yeah.
And one of the rules was you could have jetpacks. If you had built a jetpack and you spent the points in the game, you could have a jetpack.
The jetpacks don't really work.
What happens is because you turn your jetpack on, it makes a massive roar and everyone falls over because you've just set up an engine. At which point, that person sticks their hands in the air and runs off.
Superman.
You can do the thing where you can do a dramatic entrance. So you take damage and you can do dramatic entrance and you reappear and everyone falls over. And we literally had a Superman punch moment where someone was like, bad guy! Pow! And it's like, okay, cool. And that kind of, it hadn't occurred to us that players would do that, but of course they would. Someone tried to clothesline someone, two jetpack guys tried to clothesline. But the thing with LARP is that providing you, so you've got the costume, you've got the sight, you've got the effect. As far as that guy was concerned, for those 30 seconds when he was in the jetpack, he was flying.
Yeah.
Because that's how you make immersive LARP work. You set up all the little mechanics, and all of your mechanics should be designed. There's LARPers out there who'd be like, that's wrong. But there's little mechanics that you set up specifically, so it makes it easier for you to build yourself into the world.
In one of my previous episodes, if you check out the other episode, I've interviewed someone who studied LARPing as a course in cultural anthropology around the UK. And she traveled around the UK going to meet different live action role play groups. Some in Scotland, some in the north of the UK, and it was a really fun conversation talking about that, actually.
There's some really weird tribes out there.
There's apparently some interesting ones, from what she was saying, sounded like fun. Are any of you guys talking or organizing a session as part of the conference later today, or? Dave, what are you talking about?
I'm going to be talking about improv.
Okay.
And video games. And how they have a lot to learn from each other, how they have a lot of similarities, and how they both work on a yes and culture.
Yes.
And when's that going to be on?
That's going to be on at 2:30 in the big room over there.
So, well, I mean,
I think anyone listening to the listening podcast, to you might have missed it.
But the thought about the improv and gaming, I quite like. How about you in the back? Sorry, what's your name?
I'm Lex.
Lex, can you talk loud enough? Because you're in the back, just to.
Is this loud enough?
I guess we'll see. But as loud as you can. You can be as loud as.
I'm running a session on Tranquility immediately after this.
Uh huh.
You have to come see what it is.
Is it? All right, fine.
It's going to be very tranquil.
Okay. Can you give us any other clue, particularly for the people who are going to be listening to this afterwards, who can't not be at your session in 5 minutes or 10, 15 minutes, whenever
basically,
it is?
If meditation. He was false meditating.
Yes, some kind of false meditation.
If you haven't had a chance to have a nap,
it's a good time to do that over there.
Yeah, it was an early morning.
All right, cool. So what else have we got going on? Usually I finish the podcast in the last few minutes talking and cross-referencing a few different interests of mine. But to start with, it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, so we've got to have some kind of ice cream question. And plus, it's the first time I do it with a whole big audience and a big group. But just shout out, what are your favorite ice cream flavors?
Strawberry.
Magnum Double Caramel.
Okay.
Choc chip. Or
right.
Kiwi.
Kiwi. I've never had kiwi ice cream.
It's lovely.
All right. Who else?
Pistachio confused me the first time I had it, because I was like, I like this, and yet, what? Ice cream made out of pistachio nuts? What is this? Yeah, it's good.
Dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Salted caramel.
Ah, it's a very good choice. Good. Anybody in the back?
Oreo.
There is a strange blue ice cream that I always call it Smart ice cream, but I don't think that's a short name.
Viagra.
It's cold and it's blue.
Isn't it some kind of bubblegum ice cream, the blue ice cream?
Yes.
Raspberry? Blue flavor. Hello, welcome. What's your favorite ice cream?
That's one thing to put on
the spot. It depends
on the mood. Well, how about now? I don't have any, but...
Nothing really right now, to be honest.
So you like a video game where nothing happens, ice cream?
Yeah. Walking simulators.
Do you guys remember any video games or any parts of video games where there's ice cream involved?
Mario Party 5?
Psychonauts. I think.
Well, that was an adventure game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a platform adventure game.
Wasn't it around the same time as Day of the Tentacle, like that?
Yes. Psychonauts, it's like a platforming game.
Is it? I'm thinking of something else.
A kid named Raz goes to a psychic camp, goes into people's minds to uncover some sort of conspiracy.
It's amazing, everyone should play it.
I can't remember if I played it or not.
I tried playing the PS2 version, it was buggy as all hell.
It's on Steam and it works beautifully.
And it's on PS4 as well.
Other games that have ice cream, the FAB ice cream lolly. That has a video game.
Video game of the ice cream.
Kitty loves ice cream.
And unfortunately, Candy Crush doesn't have ice cream. if it doesn't, it will do now.
What do you think? So, what do you think of all the social games and the King.com and the Candy Crushers of this world? As game designers and gamers,
it's a
touchy subject, but I think it's an interesting conversation.
It works out how to make money. That counts for a lot.
Yeah,
based on gambling.
Addiction
they mechanics. They do work on addiction and gambling mechanics. Yes. And I had this conversation once with someone. Like, to me, it sounded kind of wrong, but is it?
So,
it's respectively and deviously evil. Like, the kind of evil you can be proud of.
The game is to entertain. They don't, like, they're entertaining people.
Yeah.
Making a ton of money.
Exercising the endorphin.
Like,
but you can't legislate. You can't legislate people for, you know, it's like saying, yeah, we could be snotty and say Candy Crush is to games what McDonald's is to fine dining. And that's kind of works. But on the one hand, people are now more likely to play games. And you can turn around to someone and say, here's Tin Man Games' choices. It's a better game. And they'll enjoy it. But they won't enjoy it the same way they'll enjoy Candy Crush because it's a different sort of game.
So my only issue with Candy Crush isn't the fact that they make money off it. It's the way that each level that you are given isn't necessarily beatable.
Mm.
And for me, a game that isn't beatable is not a game. So because there's a huge amount of random chance whether or not a level is actually finishable, given the set of parameters, that's what turns me off the game. Because
yeah.
I love the mechanic, I love the visual aesthetic,
you
I love
beat
the way
Space Invaders.
Can you yeah.
Yes, you can. You can clock it. You can get it to the end. You can finish each level.
What about Galaga?
Again,
can you finish Pac-Man?
Yeah, you can clock it.
256. Try it though, because you will.
Yeah,
very.
But
no, but there's certain levels where you get to a certain point. You need to have it. You need to be lucky enough to for the board to be set in a way that you can finish it without having add-ons. Right.
That's the real issue. Yeah.
You have to buy the add-ons.
Yeah.
Well, you're always encouraged to be buying the add-ons constantly, and you can get to a certain point without them. And it depends how many times you're ready to start a level over.
Yeah.
Right? Without paying.
Because you can beat any level given enough retries, but that's the trouble, that you need this random chance to be able to beat certain levels.
So many card games rely on that, don't they?
A lot of card games? Possibly. I mean, there's a lot of random chances in card games, but not as much as...
Like Gwent, sometimes you get a terrible hand and you're like, oh, I'm so stuffed.
The thing is, card games that survive. So Magic, for example, Magic the Gathering does this thing where they understand the economics and they understand the economics of the game. So sometimes some cards will come in to change the economics, and sometimes there'll be a chase card when this comes out and it'll be like a card that everyone wants, and then it'll turn up in the next starter set. So you can just buy it. And people talk about value with Magic, and they've talked about, you know, how much money is these cards worth and all the rest of it.
Mm.
But they're on it. They're on it with a mathematical formula. So providing that you want to keep playing, if you want to play at tournament level, there's a certain level of buy-in, but then there's always going to be, because that's the design of the game. You don't have to be rich to be good at Magic. You just have to be good at Magic to be good at Magic.
Yeah.
And then Fantasy Flight have done the opposite, where they've gone, no, forget that. Always chasing the carrot. Here are the boxes. Buy the boxes. The cards are in there. Done.
That's what you play with, and that's it.
There's no random chance.
There's no random chance. It's all fixed. Therefore, it becomes more about strategy and skill.
Yeah, I much prefer that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And so, sorry, you were talking about the fact that some card games in solitaire maybe were running along the same kind of mechanics. Is that what you're saying?
I was just wondering, can you always win solitaire?
No, you can't. You can't.
Yeah, not always, right?
But you also don't have to pay to play another hand of solitaire. I don't know about Windows 10, but I know previously. you play the game of solitaire. You play your game, you reshuffle, you play a game.
Edition.
It is.
Do you mean Windows 3.1?
Windows NT?
I think somebody made Windows like. A nonsense version of Windows on the internet.
Around the time I was born, apparently.
It's good stuff.
God, I feel old.
Another question I usually go with, because I work in marketing and advertising, so I kind of ask let's start with this one, like an ad that you've seen at some point that was particularly memorable. And it may be something from childhood, or it could be last week.
Dr. Pepper.
For a game.
Not necessarily anything. For a game, anything. For a game, why not? If you remember one for a game, then great. What's the Dr. Pepper ad?
Just the tune, you know. What's the worst that can happen? It's always stuck with me since I watched it.
It's all about what's the worst that can happen. That was a few years ago, wasn't it?
It was a long time ago.
The
first version of that was in the 80s.
Okay, I don't...
Slightly different jingle there.
Or might have even been in the 70s.
I'll have to check it out. I remember recently from a few years ago, there was a couple of campaigns about what's the worst that can happen. And they had, if I remember correctly, a few years ago, they had a Facebook app that made some scandal because you can turn on you can put the app on and it would post updates that would be embarrassing updates to your thing, to your feed, randomly, and you could select how embarrassing you wanted the updates to be, but you didn't know what was going to be posted. But of course, one was like tendentiously a little bit sexual, and some parents like complained and they had to pull it out, and it made some headlines.
Pull out.
It's because it's stuck in my mind, and I think it's worth mentioning. The Kiara advert, which is now horribly culturally insensitive.
Oh, yes, indeed.
It is awful. But the song's really catchy and the cartoon's really shiny. And if it wasn't for the fact that it's... You look at it in modern eyes and you go, oh, no!
Yeah. What is it? Sorry.
It's an advert for an orange drink called Kiara.
Yeah.
It goes, Kiara.
A doobie 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 doo. You see, and we still... And this is 30 years ago, because you're not seeing this advert on television, and I'm not going to explain why. Look it up on YouTube and you'll immediately realise.
I want to drink some of your current Kiara. It's just for me and my dog. Kiara.
Yeah.
Do you remember the ones with really catchy songs or something? Because I can remember like Weetabix adverts when I was 5.
Yeah.
And like one with car driving, and they sent it to I Will Survive. And that stuck in my head. And radio, similarly. But I know the phone number for Cold Steel Windows, a double glazing outfit in Leicester, because they played it every day on a particular radio station that was on my bus.
Imagine pitching those kinds of ads to your advertising agency. Ta-da!
The thing is, they're quite scary. My friend, we were talking about these phone numbers with jingles that you always remember, and she started reciting a number, and I could finish it. And I went, "What's that? A number? What is that?" And she went, "I think it was the phone number for like Live and Kicking."
Was it by any chance?
And I can't tell you it, but if you start it, I can finish it.
081 811 805.
It's kind of scary.
It is kind of scary. Actually, we were talking about Inside Out, the Pixar movie, a little bit earlier. Has everybody seen it?
Yeah.
So it's not a major spoiler.
There's a bubble gum jingle that's completely stuck in her head.
Toothpaste.
I thought it was bubble gum.
It's bubble gum?
Yeah.
I thought it was gum. It is gum. You're right. Yeah, but that's fantastic. Yeah, it is true. Like, you're stuck somewhere in your memory and it comes back randomly. Or it comes back where the numbers have been and you're like, oh, I remember the end of that. Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, the people downstairs inside a brain just like keep putting it in for a laugh. And it irritates everyone. Like, what's this jingle doing?
I could swing this all around back to games. There's a Delta Green scenario. So Call of Cthulhu Delta Green scenario.
Yeah.
Where someone invents an advert but is inspired by Haster, the King in Yellow.
Wow.
So it's a bit of the King in Yellow, which obviously the King in Yellow eats your mind. It turns you into it, more of it. It's a horrible killer meme before even the word meme was invented. And it's about agents finding this jingle, desperately trying to stop it before it eats the world.
Wow.
It's the King in Yellow as an advert.
Mm. That's fantastic. I've never read that one. I've checked it out.
They've just relaunched a whole bunch of stuff. So I think it's Dennis Detweiler, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have a look and I'll add all of that in the show notes in the end. Well, that was fantastic. Thank you so much. Anything, any last words to add? But I mean, the first place, I'm really, really glad I got such a great audience and such a great conversation out of you guys. Thank you very much.
Three people at the beginning to now 14 right
now. Yeah, we've got like 14 people now. A bit of a cheer and say hi to all the people listening.
Hello!
Hey! All right, Game Camp, come and join us at Game Camp. Game Camp's going to happen again next year, right? I mean, probably.
I assume so.
For anybody who's going to be in London, probably like around May-ish next year, watch out for it. Yeah. All right, thank you guys. All right. Already another episode wrapping up. That was my first live audience. It was a lot of fun. Because it's a bit random. So as I said at the beginning, it was pretty improvised. But I'm going to be adding in the show notes all the different links to the people who participated and gave me their Twitter handles. So that you can go and follow these people on Twitter. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is @HippoWill. Or if you want to find out more information about Ice Cream for Everyone, everything's on the website. That's at www.icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything's spelled out. You can find the list of episodes of the podcast, the Ice Cream Sunday newsletter. You can sign up for the Ice Cream Sunday newsletter. You can find out what I do for a living and get in touch with me if you need any kind of marketing and brand strategy advice. I do that for gaming as well. So marketing for gaming is something that I do as well. What else? You can ask me any questions, give me comments. As I said at the beginning, if you can give us a rating or review on like iPhone podcasting app, that'd be awesome. Or even better, I mean, if you enjoyed it, why don't you just share it with a friend? Send it over to them or post it on your Twitter or Facebook or favorite social network, whichever that may be. What else? I think that's about it for now, essentially. Enjoy the rest of your morning, day, evening, whatever time it is for you. And see you again soon. All right, cheers, bye.